Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, hey, hey. It's Friday, April 12th, and your Ben Jarofsky Show starts now. Today, it's Friday, so Ben's doing a little thing called Oh, What a Week. Ben and a top guest talk the top stories from around the city, the country, the world, all over the place. And today, he's got none other than comedian and talk show host, Pat Whalen. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, you want to get tickets for the event coming up, the Best of Chicago event happening at the zoo, you got to head to ChicagoReader.com to get in for that. And if you want more Ben Jarofsky, just head on over to ChicagoReader.com/Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A, V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Good Press Friday, and here's why. Actually, it's not Good Press Friday at all. It's What a Week. Patrick J. Whalen is standing by. Impresario, comedian, brilliant political strategist, one of the greatest impersonators of Nick Spezzato the city of Chicago has ever seen.
One of? Sorry.
And dear friend of this show. I did want to open up with this. I've noted that Crane Chicago Business has given two, how do I put this? I don't want to say puff pieces. That sounds so unfair. But more or less positive stories about people in the Brandon Johnson administration. One is his new planning commissioner. And the other is his new chief of staff. And Ronnie Reese, if you're listening, congratulations. And so Ronnie Reese, of course, as my distinguished guest, Patrick J. Whalen knows, is, what's his title? Press secretary, comedian? Like, they don't call him press secretary. That's not good enough for them anymore. They're like communications generals. I don't know what that. But essentially, their job is to cultivate good relations with the press. So you get stories like this. And I used to see stories like this all the time when Mayor Daley was the mayor and Mayor Rahm was the mayor. And it would be like these stories that would appear in the Tribune or Cranes or the Bright One. And it would be like, Billy Bob is now the planning commissioner. Billy Bob's brilliant. Billy Bob's smart. Billy Bob's insightful. He's a reformer, but he's pragmatic. David Axelrod. He's a reformer, but he's pragmatic, which means he's not a reformer at all. He's just like, I don't know what he is. If you're a reformer and pragmatic, you can't be one or the other. You know, he's a reformer, but he knows enough not to push it. Okay. Anyway, I used to see this all the time, and they would have these stock quotes from people who were like friends of theirs or colleagues of theirs. And they would say brilliant things like, let's say I was writing a story about Patrick Whalen. It would be like Patrick's old roommate Billy Bob says Patrick's brilliant. Patrick can speak 10 languages. Patrick's insightful. He sits there and he absorbs what you say and he knows exactly. And they would put this out and Chicago would read it and go, oh, we are in good hands. We are being led by really good people. See, we didn't get that with Brandon Johnson in the first year. And everyone's like, he's got terrible press relations. What is it? Chicago Magazine, I think, gave him a D or something. And then they brought in some guy, Tom Bowen, who is a strategist for like the other side. And they asked him to weigh in. This is the worst press relations I've ever seen. Wait, it's like exactly the most, I don't know, objective source there. Anyway, two for two. These two stories coming out. Ronnie's working his magic. He's on the phone right now. Hey, Cranes, how you doing? I got a story for you. This is off the record, but let me help you here. Cranes, I'm like, they have stars in her eyes. Do you think it could have something to do with the fact that Mayor Johnson's gearing up to give a whole bunch of money to the Bears and the White Sox? Do you think that may have something to do with it? We're going to bring on Patrick J. Whalen. There is no J in the name. It's inaccurate. But I love giving him that J anyway. Patrick, your thoughts. Suddenly, Ronnie is brilliant at spinning the press. The press is being spun right now by Ronnie. That's the press right now. Your thoughts, young man.
I haven't seen these puff pieces. I thought when you said puff piece, you were going to talk about House of the Rising Rom, which is, I think, a combination of, I think, three different metaphors that overlap. I hear a lot about the mayor being a very big sports fan. I've always thought that Arlington Heights was kind of a pipe dream because, sure, the Bears could go there, but how will they be received? How will that work? I'm not so well versed when it comes to sports, but I saw the young Greg Pratt speak with Laura Washington last week, and he talked a lot about the balance of access and reporting, right? And how he talked about how when he started reporting sharply on former mayor Lori Lightfoot. Do you say former mayor? Is it like senator? They're always a senator? I don't know.
That's a great question.
Lori Lightfoot Esquire. She cut him off and she wouldn't give him access anymore. Now, is this Ronnie or the administration? Because, you know, that Fetterman guy's in the mix now.
Yeah, but what's his name? No one knows. He isn't here. I don't give him any. I don't know the man. So I can't even give him his name. The Fetterman guy, John Fetterman, is John Fetterman, the former senator. God, I don't know. You put former in my mind. The current senator from the state of Pennsylvania, and his former press aide is now working for Brandon Johnson.
Even if he's a former senator, he's still a senator, like I said.
That is correct.
But I answer your question with a question. This is a classic Pat Whalen duck and dodge.
By the way, this is masterful duck and dodging by Patrick J. Go ahead.
You can't hear yourself spinning, but you're being spun. Is the choice binary? Is the choice binary? Because at first I heard, and I'm interested to talk to Greg about this, that there was that combative nature where the press felt like they weren't getting access or anything from the men that made them very frustrated, and they would reflect that in their writing. But now, what are the puff pieces about? It is about that cut the tape thing, because
let me reverse myself and not say puff piece. That's me editing myself
while he's spinning, he's rewinding.
Complimentary. They were old style stories about. One was an interview with Bo Wright, who's the new planning commissioner, and the other was just an old fashioned profile. Christina Paciona Zayas, the new chief of staff, and so the classic Chicago media profile is where you've given a list of names, probably by the person you're profiling, of people that you have been, you can call. I know this, Pat, because I've done a few of these in my life. A little embarrassed to say. And then you dutifully call those people and you get their complimentary comments and you stitch it all together. And generally, this is sort of my interpretation of it. Feel free to disagree with me. You write these as much to guarantee access as anything else. So let's say I write a really positive article about you and you're a prominent member of the Johnson administration. That means you'll take my call and you'll go off the record and you'll give me inside scoop about what's going on. And I'll have to judge how valid your inside scoops are by what other people are telling me, because I won't I'm not in the back room, right? So I'm relying on you. But that's the game that's being played. I hadn't seen that played that first year. I hadn't seen. There was a complimentary articles about the mayor's former chief of staff, but most of those were along the lines of Rich Gaides is the only man in City Hall right now who knows anything. God help us all. The entire city will collapse if he leaves City Hall because Brandon Johnson doesn't know what he's doing. That was the kind of article that I saw. So this notion that there's like credible people not named Gaides in City Hall, to me, is a sign that Mayor Johnson is doing a better job of spinning the press. And it's also a sign that the press is welcoming these initiatives like the handouts to the Bears and the White Sox. Do you think I am too cynical and jaded, young Patrick goes?
I think I'm too cynical and jaded, Ben. And I think you are a damn ray of sunshine when it comes to outlooks. But you understand Chicago better than I do. And I think there's a couple factors at play. One of which I won't pull the thread on, is that this used to be a two-paper town and with three TV channels, you know, and now there's 31 flavors out there where you can get anything you want. But these mainstream, you know, publications are still in play with large subscriber bases and advertising bases. But I would ask, of the two in this binary choice, and it sounds like there's three options, and I'll give you the first two and then I'll give you the third. The first is when you profile someone, call people that like them and get glowing reviews. The second is call Tom Bowen and put him in the slammer. And, or the third, you could call someone that doesn't know them or is ambivalent. Be like, ah, you know, I don't know. They're all right. Doesn't really, it's probably not going to generate a lot of clicks. But, you know, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. But unless you could merge them. Are there any examples of merging the good and the bad reviews of these profiles that you're describing?
I don't know. This is a great question. And I've just, the older I get, the more jaded I become about how the media interacts with politicians. So I just don't, I just feel like there's a larger game being played, and we have to always learn to read between the lines of what's going on. And in some weird ways, I trust more Wikipedia. And I know this is like horrible for me to say this, but Wikipedia, it, more often than not, just like lists things. You get what I'm saying? So you have a recitation of what somebody has done in his or her life, followed by the positives and the controversies. And then there's links to articles. And then when I'm doing that real deep dive that I do way too often, Pat, where this is why I don't get any sleep. I will click on those articles and then I'll see further, substantiation about what they're saying. So, I just need the basic resume, if you follow what I'm saying, as opposed to some kind of canned quote that someone gives one way or the other. Do you follow me?
I do. Yeah. I do. And that, I think, would take more time. Again, I haven't read this piece. I think it's Lee John Greco. Go Bills. But... is there any sort of synthesizing of the material that is received, or, you know, cause like, again, I'm reading Pratt's book and he says, you know, this person says this, but also this happened, and he's kind of leaving it to the reader to decide or infer or make their own judgment based on, you know, a plethora of evidence.
I feel that, the Gene Greco article is the profile. And I feel that one, how do I put this? That one was an attempt, and a pretty successful attempt, to show the positives of Zayas, the woman who's now the chief of staff, and what drives her and what motivates her, and to do it in a way that didn't scare white people. Let's just boil it down to that. Because Zayas is a person from a quote-unquote progressive, so she's from the left, and many of the issues that motivate her to public service are issues of criminal justice needs and racism, the battling racism, et cetera, and so forth. And so if in the hands of your traditional mainstream journalist, that could be turned into all kinds of code words saying that she's a dangerous radical leftist who's going to make the streets less safe. And I believe that the Crane's article was void of that kind of rhetoric and was just like a straightforward portrait of Zayas in a positive way. There was a positive spin to it, if you follow what I'm saying. Like, she works hard. She's competent. The city's in good hands with her as our steward, kind of the theme of it. Don't be scared of her. But it didn't run from, you know, there was no attempt to rewrite her worldview. And so that's why I'm saying, like, wow, this is a pretty positive piece about a lefty or a progressive. She probably would call herself a progressive, not a lefty. A progressive. That's why I'm saying, Pat. You get what I'm saying? So I'm like, okay. And then the funny thing, I'm getting calls from various Johnson types going, can you get me the article? Because I can't get the article. There's a paywall at Crane's. I'm like, hey, Crane's, man, you got to lower that paywall every now and then. That's a whole other issue. So that's what I'm saying. And I've not
seen... Is it a whole other issue?
What, the paywall?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Crane's just okay. So I admit I have a bias here, Pat. I admit I have a bias. Oh. Yes, this is my bias. I've said it on the mic before. My life's an open book. Okay, my bias against Crane's is the reader's free. I give Crane's my material all the time. You know, where's the quid pro quo? Hey, this is a city where one hand washes the other, where you look out for each other, huh? When are you guys going to let me get some of the freedom, huh? No, Ben, you get the paywall. Boom. Anything I write in the reader, my podcast, free. Here you go. You can take it. Crane's is like, no. What was Burns? They're like Burns in The Simpsons. More for us. Ben has to pay. What was this from? Montgomery, right? Montgomery, yeah.
Montgomery Burns.
Yes. Can you do a Montgomery Burns imitation?
Excellent.
Do Montgomery Burns as the publisher of Crane's telling Ben that he can't get access to their articles.
Dorofsky's out of touch. What the children want to learn about is real estate.
Anyway, congratulations, Mayor Johnson and Ronnie. You're getting some positive spin. It's going to end the day you don't give the White Sox and the Bears their money. That's my prediction, okay? I believe there's a correlation. Just saying. I believe there's a correlation. Patrick J. Whalen thinks I'm too cynical and jaded.
No, I don't. No, I think I misunderstood. I thought what you were saying is he's definitely going to give them the money. But you're saying that the choice is coming up, and so they're buttering him up to make a choice that they want him to make?
Yes.
Oh.
Now, I put it to you this way. The fact that he's thinking and he's publicly talking about giving them the money is it's going to warm him to people, to media outlets that have been hostile to him in the past. The fact
that the red tape thing was certainly well-received by a lot of his critics.
The red tape thing where he's cutting the red tape on what now?
Developers and zoning, from what I understand, basically new construction.
You know what's funny about red tape being cut? My whole life in Chicago, I've been reading about mayors cutting red tape. You figure they run out of red tape to cut after 40 years of cutting red tape? I mean, we're streamlining the approval process for zoning deals here in the city of Chicago, says Mayor Daley, says Mayor Rahm. Wait a minute. How could you streamline it even more? I thought he streamlined it. You know how, like, when they do a budget, Pat, they're always like, if the budget, we're able to balance the budget because of economies that our crack team of fiduciary overseers have come up with, figuring out how to streamline payments to vendors. And it's like they feed this stuff to the press. The press is like, oh, sounds good to me. Puts it in there. Then they come on WTTW and they, well, we've streamlined things very effectively. I'm like, wait a minute. Didn't the last guy streamline? How can we streamline?
It's even, the lines are even streamier now.
That's the streamiest line I've ever seen. By the way, before we came on the air, I have to say this. Patrick read me this Paxer's tweet. And now, since I've been on the air, two listeners have sent this to me. Mary Ann Ahern, scathing letter from three Jewish elected leaders explaining to Chicago mayors why they're refusing his request for meeting next week. Read it here. And they come from Alderwoman Deborah Silverstein and State Senator Sarah Feigenholz and Representative Bob Morgan. I'm reading this letter. The gist of it is that these three leaders are really upset with Mayor Brandon Johnson. I just have to say this. Get this on my chest for being the decisive vote on a ceasefire resolution. There were two resolutions that came before the Chicago City Council on the ongoing war in Gaza. One was the initial resolution by Deborah Silverstein that essentially supported Israel and condemned the atrocious Hamas attacks of October 7th, which killed 1,200 Israelis. And that passed by voice vote. And Mayor Brandon Johnson supported that resolution. And he got it through the city council, I thought, very effectively. And he provided, additionally, he provided the decisive vote for, Danny LaSpada's resolution. I keep giving Rosanna Rodriguez credit for it, but I think the sponsor was Danny LaSpada, the alderman of the First Ward. So essentially, he helped pass the pro-Israel resolution and the pro-ceasefire resolution. He's being condemned for the pro-ceasefire resolution. I feel that's unfair. I feel like he's trying to find a middle ground in a city where there are supporters of Israel who essentially support Israel's right to do whatever it wants. And then there are people in the city of Chicago, many people, Palestinian Americans who have relatives in Gaza, and just Chicagoans who are outraged by the ongoing carnage in Israel. And so I feel that the mayor is really trying to walk that line where he's the mayor for both sides. And so I just think it's unfair. I felt I had a comment on it. Pat, you sent it to me, and then two other listeners sent it to me while I'm doing this show. And I know we didn't say we're going to talk. I didn't even know that this existed until I started the recording. But that's just my general thoughts. Do you have any thoughts on this before we move on?
I think, we're a year in, and this is life in the big chair, right? This is what he ran for. And you are subject to the times that you live in. But I don't hate to keep plugging Pratt, but I keep going back to it because he said something interesting. Someone asked him in the audience, how do you think it compares with Lightfoot and Johnson? It's something I'm thinking about while I read his book. And he said, I think Johnson has still potential in his administration because I would rather start middling or low and work my way up as opposed to starting way high in approval with Lightfoot and then have nothing but room to drop. And it sounds like it's him trying to meet with folks and, that co-governance that he's been beating the drum about. But it takes two to tango. And, I don't know. It's a real sticky wicket, especially when, everyone's asking why are local politicians commenting on, international affairs? But it's very difficult to walk and chew gum when you're a leader at that level.
It's either you don't comment or you do comment. You're absolutely on target when you say that people criticized Brandon Johnson for getting involved in foreign affairs or international affairs, and claimed that the city should make no comment whatsoever about what's going on in the world. But they only seemed to make that observation when Brandon Johnson opposes them. So, for instance, there were, when Mayor Johnson cast a deciding vote on the ceasefire resolution, I heard a lot of people say, this is a waste of time. Why is the city council debating something that's going on in Gaza? We have crime issues that we must deal with right here in the city of Chicago. This is a waste of time. I'm like, that's funny. I didn't hear you saying that when the city council debated Deborah Silverstein's resolution supporting Israel. I didn't hear you say that was a waste of time. So it's either don't do any resolutions on anything outside of the city of Chicago, you know, at all, or don't say it's a waste of time. You know what I mean?
Are you saying that people are biased and have agendas and individual outlooks based on their personal experiences, Ben?
Yes.
Because that's not going to sell papers.
And it gets moves into the topic that's on my mind. And I've been following this one very closely. And that is Donald Trump's attempt to manipulate as best he can what's happening in Gaza and Israel to his advantage. And Pat, I sent you as homework, and I apologize because it was a hefty homework assignment, the article from yesterday's New York Times. And I make fun of the New York Times political coverage because by and large, it's intended to scare liberal Democrats and put them in the fetal position over the prospects of Donald Trump winning re-election. And it's become a caricature of itself. But this one, there was some actual reporting, Pat, and it was very illustrative. It's about how Donald Trump is trying to exploit third-party runs to his advantage. And he's pulling up what I essentially would call a Pritzker strategy. And get your thoughts on this one. So the Pritzker strategy was what Pritzker and the Democrats did in the primary, the Republican primary, leading up to the 2022 showdown between your favorite gubernatorial candidate, Darren Bailey, and J.B. I just said this, see if you're paying attention, and J.B. Pritzker. And that was where Democrats aired commercials during the primary season, presenting Darren Bailey as a radical MAGA man that we should fear. And of course, it had the reverse impact of telling Republicans or MAGA people who are watching, oh, this is the guy I should vote for because he's the MAGGiest of all the MAGA people in the race. I disapproved of that strategy. I can't recall if you and I had a conversation about that strategy. Did we have a conversation about that strategy?
I don't think we had one on the air.
What'd you think about it? All right, and then I'll tell you what Donald Trump's doing. So what Donald Trump is doing is he's going to have PACs, dark money PACs, we don't really know who's supporting them, air commercials in swing states promoting candidates like Jill Stein or Cornel West, who are running as third-party candidates, or Robert Kennedy. In the case of Robert Kennedy, radical environmentalist. So somebody might go, oh, he's a radical environmentalist. I'm a lefty. I believe in radical environmentalism. I'll vote for him because I can't stand Biden. Or he'll promote Cornel West and Jill Stein as radical supporters of Palestine who hate Israel. And then a leftist who feels very strongly about what's going on in Gaza goes, oh, I'll vote for them. And so it's all an attempt to get people who might otherwise vote for Joe Biden to vote third party. I feel it's a similar tactic to what the Democrats, including Pritzker, employed in 2022. Your thoughts about this young man?
Well, in 22, I definitely thought that Bailey was a threat. That didn't really play out. I don't think he's going anywhere. I thought that his congressional run was a lot closer than I would have anticipated. I don't know about you. We never talked about that. But if you want to talk about bias and people's outlook affecting how they feel, how do the people who feel that crime is out of control is a very deliberate phrase to use. If crime is out of control in Chicago, It's lawless here. Cut to Darren Bailey holding up his shooting range target that said, "I will not comply," after the assault weapons ban passed. Yes. So in answering your question about whether or not, look, politics ain't beanbag, to quote Harold Washington. It's the anniversary of his reelection today. Happy reelection, sir. Your honor. Politics ain't beanbag. Welcome to the NBA. People who run campaigns aren't worried about your feelings. They're worried about putting points on the board.
Yeah.
They're worried about winning. Governing is not their problem. Campaigning, politics is their problem. So what I would say is, if you're going to play that way in campaign season, the way you got to play in governing season is bringing people together. I think Biden tried to do this throughout his campaign, or his tenure, his first term. And I think Governor Pritzker has done that as well. I think the infrastructure investments downstate, a lot of factories, a lot of manufacturing, a lot of industry jobs, right? That's, we're bringing jobs to where you live,
mm-hmm.
because you don't like that the rest of the, or Chicago, has all the money. And so he's made big investments downstate, throughout the state, all over, in trying to show people, listen, we can agree on some things. That's the good way to govern after campaigning that way.
Yeah, that's fair.
This Trump thing for me, and we haven't quite gotten to the abortion thing yet, but a soft segue is, I think people are caught up in the 4D chess again. Everyone thinks Trump's playing four-dimensional chess. No, he's not. No, he's not. He's okay. Trying to win. Like you said, he's trying to manipulate people and change the conversation. And abortion is a great example for that for me, because I think that a lot of conservatives were like, yeah, this is a good political bargaining chip. This is a way for us to convince people to vote for our party. And they're like, okay, great. So we're going to make abortion illegal. Well, wait a minute now. Hang on. We don't want to go that far. We want to talk about it. We want to make it an issue. But, you know, Ben, what's your favorite phrase? Well, one of them. Shut up, Pat. No, it's rules for thee.
Oh, yeah.
For me.
Shut up, Pat. It's definitely not one of my favorite phrases.
It's up there. Top five.
Wow. What you said is true. I mean, that opening, and when you were saying it, I was like, yeah, Ben, you are kind of wimpy here.
Wimpy?
No, because what you said, like, politics ain't beanbag, it
sets the tone, I think, is what you're getting at. And that's what I didn't encapsulate well, is that this increases rhetoric.
Well, okay, so here's my problem with when Pritzker did it. And now I'll get into my problem when Trump is doing it, and he is doing it, ladies and gentlemen. So we'll deal with Pritzker first. I take seriously the threat of MAGA, and I take seriously the threat of Darren Bailey. And you pointed out what a lunatic he is with that commercial that you cited, which is, it's just a really horrific commercial.
Lawlessness.
Out of control. Yeah, out of control. And he's just like, the laws don't abide by, I don't have to pay attention to laws. I'm above the law. It's very Trumpian, you know. So your laws about my guns, which are like,
he lost Trump's endorsement and the next day had a campaign event where he sold a gold plated gun with Trump's face on it.
Wow. That so deep. I mean, that just goes to show you the depths of cultism in MAGA. Where you're right, this is classic Trump. This gets Trump on abortion. It were two Republicans running against each other in a Republican primary, each one of them pledging allegiance to Donald Trump, the incumbent Mike Bost, the challenger Darren Bailey, who had been the Republican gubernatorial candidate against Pritzker. Trump's endorsement would be key, very important. Now, I personally think Bost could have won the election even without Trump's endorsement, and I think Donald Trump also thought that. And as a result,
he wanted to pick a winner.
Exactly. This is the quote unquote, I have it in quotes, pragmatic Donald Trump.
So he's a reformer, but he's pragmatic.
Yeah. David Axelrod, he's a reformer, but a pragmatic one. What? Wait a minute. How can you be both? Well, he's smart enough not to push anything, Ben. Okay. That's what I mean. You don't want to upset anything. He believes in economic equality, but he's willing to give money to the bears. That's what. So Trump, you're exactly right. If he were going to the MAGA-est candidate, would have probably gone with Darren Bailey. But he figured Boss was going to win, and Boss was MAGA enough, so he went with Boss. And then the newspaper's trying to draw a distinction that could educate voters about these two candidates, position Boss as Boss, B-O-S-T, as the more moderate Republican. And I'm laughing. I'm like, what? Give me any instance that Boss is more moderate than Darren Bailey. And then to which Patrick J. Whalen would say, well, Ben, Michael Boss doesn't have commercials that show him, what, shooting up targets? So firing his rifles. So in this day and age, I guess that makes him the quote unquote more moderate. Although I would say, Pat, by that token, moderate has lost all meaning whatsoever. If he's more moderate just because he's less inflammatory in his commercials, is that it? Is that what moderate has become?
Yeah. I think the definition of moderate has shifted. Just, you know, a moderate is someone who won't kill someone for not feeling the same way they do. You know, what, the 38% of voters think that violence is possible in terms of maintaining political stability in this country.
Yeah.
I'm going to see Civil War tonight, the A24 film. I don't know why.
I don't know why either. Wow.
I don't know. But, you know, it's a theme. And I think that the criticism of the Pritzker side when that was happening in the election was that they were toning down more realistic candidates in an effort to beat Bailey because it would be easier to beat him. But I maintain that this Boss race shows us he is a serious threat. And it's not Darren Bailey. It's the tone and tenor of what is happening. We didn't just fall out of a coconut tree. We are in the context of our times, as Kamala Harris would say.
Yeah. And by the way, I take back what I said. I understand exactly why you're going to see Civil War. And I should probably see it myself.
I just want some escapism. You know, I just want to get away. You know, I just want to see something they could just take me out. Something lighthearted, you know, and have a laugh.
So what I was saying is I take seriously the MAGA threat. Darren Bailey, I viewed as a serious threat. And so the notion that he would be the Republican gubernatorial candidate and that much closer to actually being the governor of the state of Illinois was scary to me. And I also, you get your thoughts on this, the Adam Kinzinger response. And Kinzinger, of course, the former Republican congressman from Northern Illinois, who's since been drummed out of the party and has actually left Illinois. Like, it seems like all these Republicans are leaving Illinois. Anyway, Bruce Rotter left Illinois. Kenny G left Illinois. His point was, by promoting Darren Bailey this way, you're undercutting any attempt by a Republican who's more moderate to win the primary. I'm like, I don't know how moderate any of you guys are, really. That's my other, but that, you know, that was his response. So you say you're against MAGA, but you're like advancing MAGA's cause. It's a dangerous game. What's your thoughts on the Adam Kinzinger critique?
That this is playing into raising the rhetoric?
Yeah, this makes it that much harder for any non-MAGA Republican to win in the primary and thus shift the balance away from MAGA, more toward the middle.
Adam Kinzinger is a moderate Republican, so of course he feels that way. They are the minority in their party right now, and I think they need to take a good hard look in the mirror and ask themselves, who is a Republican anymore? Is it the moderates? Is it the Bost? Is it the Kinzinger, who we still, you know, are not lefties by any stretch of the imagination? Or is it the majority of the voters in your party?
Good point.
So maybe it's not. Yeah. You know, my grandma always used to say, couldn't be you, could it?
Yeah.
Couldn't be you, could it? You're running on a ticket for a party whose voters don't support you. You need to get a grip on that first, you know? And I at the time and during that gubernatorial election, I understood what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the rhetoric in this country, I think that they were onto something. And that is, we need to hit this shit head on. We can't ignore it. We can't act like it's not there. You can't beat what you can't see. And it is a threat, and it's getting worse. And so if you want to ignore a problem and hope it goes away, good luck. Historically, I don't think that's been a great move. But, you know, this guy, the guns shit, like, come on, man. Yeah. What are we doing? What are we doing here?
Yeah.
Let's get serious. Politics ain't beanbag. Harold Washington.
So this is a classic case of when it meet, you know, like the flag in the wind. Because as soon as you were done with that riff, I was like, yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. I'm a wimp. And Pritzker's strategy was a sound one.
No, I want to push back on that, Ben. I don't think you're a wimp.
Well, I was speaking.
I know. I don't think Kinzinger is a wimp either. I think it's fair enough to say, but it's just not happening in a vacuum. Is it a shame? Is it terrible? Does it make me sick? Does it make it difficult to sleep and read the news sometimes? Yes. But it is the reality.
It is the reality. By the way, and every time I mention Adam Kinzinger, I got to give a shout out to Heidi Henry, who is a Democratic activist from Kinzinger country, or she would say Kinzinger's from her country, out in the boonies, as she jokingly puts it. And she would always point out, Ben, stop promoting Adam Kinzinger as this great statesman, and he's a Republican hack. And she and so many Democratic activists ran against Adam Kinzinger when back in the day before he was drummed out of the party. So, Heidi, shout out to you. All right. So here's the game that Trump is playing to win. I get your thoughts on how it's going to work. So as we all know, we have this electoral college, and there are red states that are absolutely going to go for Donald Trump no matter what. And there are blue states that are going to go for Joe Biden no matter what. And the election will be decided by a handful of swing states. And Donald Trump, there are two forces essentially in this race there that could win it for Donald Trump. One is the strong antipathy that many people have toward Joe Biden's handling of the ongoing war in Gaza. And then there's the abortion issue. We'll get into abortion in a little while. But Donald Trump's strategy is to get as many Democrats or people who might vote Democrat who are outraged by Joe Biden's embrace of Netanyahu in the early stages of this conflict to vote third party. Okay. In addition, he could use some Democrats to vote for him. So his strategy is to, one, entice lefty Democrats or lefties to vote for third party candidates by pointing out how Joe Biden is a good friend to Israel. At the same time, he is saying this outrageous things like Jews are traitors to the religion if they vote for Joe Biden. So he's hoping literally that Jewish voters cross over and vote for him. So you get Jewish voters to vote for him on the grounds that Joe Biden is not enough supporter of Israel. And you get lefties to vote for Cornel West or to vote for Robert Kennedy, which is bizarre because he's even more critical of Palestine than Biden, or Jill Stein, on the grounds that Biden's too friendly to Israel. It's pretty low life, in my opinion. But to quote you, politics ain't beanbag.
It ain't.
is doing, and it could win in Michigan. Your thoughts?
Politics ain't cornhole either. Say what you want about RFK. You love him, you hate him. This is the best season of Curb Your Enthusiasm ever. Can you believe that you know who his wife is, right?
Yeah, no, I knew you were Cheryl Hines. Yeah, I knew it. That was a good
try. RFK is no Ted Danson, but yeah. That's another story for another day.
Before you respond to the question, have you seen the entire – have you watched all the Curbs? Okay.
I saw the finale.
All right, don't say a word. I've not seen it yet, so don't ruin it. That's what I was always saying. Please – I just did I recorded a conversation with Romana Hussein, who is a big Larry David fan, and she's seen it all. And she was sworn not to talk about it while I pledged to have caught up by the next time we're on the show. So anyway, continue.
Only spoiler I'll give is Ted Danson rips his face off and it's RFK. It's a huge twist.
Okay.
Amazing.
I don't believe that. Go ahead.
Divide and conquer strategy work in Michigan? Yeah. Is that...
Yes, Michigan, Arizona, wherever.
You know, going back to that rhetoric conversation we just had around Bailey, the Biden camp and Democrats in general, we've talked before, are hedging their bets on the fact that Trump is going to be Trump. It's like a bizarro West Wing. Let Trump be Trump.
Yeah.
Give him enough rope and he will hang himself. Okay. Now, if my friends of the Jewish faith want to vote with a guy who's got white supremacists on his side, that is their choice. I think that we have to see what's going to happen in the next few days. And I don't want to go down a darker path here, but there are talk of imminent attacks in the Middle East in the next 24 hours or so. Our diplomatic centers in countries across the Middle East have told American residents not to travel there and to stay away. So this is a fluid situation. And the idea that support for Israel today will mean what support for Israel today means in a week, I don't think that can work. What I do think is something that we learned the lesson, the beatings will continue until morale improves. Is that Trump is better at playing the media. Look at the abortion thing. Look at everything. Jesus. I mean, the guy just knows how to play media like the fiddle, and he knows how to stay ahead of general public consensus. And he tries to stay one step ahead of that. And when the rubber meets the road, the guy is good. You got to give him credit. So I think the real danger is he going to manipulate people enough? It's kind of an arms race between his manipulation and the candidates on the left who will not get out for whatever reason. Because Larry tells him, not yet, a few more episodes. And then the arms race of that side is against the arms race of, will Donald Trump show his ass? Meaning, will he be himself? And everyone will go, whoa, I got to wake up here. This is a binary choice.
Yeah.
And I don't have the answer to that. I think this is going to be a very exciting rest of the year, you know, because we're leading up to the DNC. Obviously, stuff in the Middle East is really raw. And the Biden camp is holding, they're holding to this idea that Trump will show himself all along the way, forgiving student debt. You know, Biden's putting points on the board. They're getting serious about their ground game, apparently. A lot of people were criticizing them about making mistakes from 2016 all over again. I didn't think that was going to be a possibility. But I think the public needs to be concerned. I can't speak for the campaign or the political side of it. I think these people are smarter than me. But the public is like, oh, man, they're sharing articles and saying, oh, Biden has so much more money than Trump. That doesn't matter to me, because what Biden needs that money for is to convince people to vote for him. Trump doesn't need to convince anyone who supports him. He doesn't need to do anything. There are Christians who will change their views on abortion. You mark my words, because it is rules for thee, not for me. You know, I'm not going to do the whole MSNBC list, but, you know, the 90 plus felonies, the porn star litigation. Give me a break. This isn't about values. This is about feeling good, reinforcing your own worldview. And politics ain't beanbag.
Wait, just elaborate a little bit. I didn't understand what you were getting at when you said there are Christians who will turn their view on abortion because rules for thee, not for me. What did you mean by that?
I mean, that it felt to me like in some of these states, they're like, yes, we are anti-abortion. You can't have abortion. But then when you try to pass a law that says you can't have abortion and that you'll jail all doctors who do it in the state, that doesn't pass. Huh. I wonder what that's about. What it's about, I suspect, is that there are people who say they're anti-abortion, but when push comes to shove and they need someone or someone they love needs one, all of a sudden, well, God forgives.
So, all right. Yes, there's absolute hypocrisy when it comes to the procedure abortion. I've said this on the mic many times. I would not be surprised, to put it mildly, if Donald Trump had been responsible for a few abortions because he bragged so much about how promiscuous he was in the 60s and 70s and into the 80s. And so and he used to be a big supporter. I don't know if you know this, Pat, but he was a abortion rights supporter back in the day. And then it was only when he was running for president as a Republican and he needed evangelical votes that he switched. To me, the hypocrisy, it's a hypocrisy, but the bind that, so I already described the situation that Democrats are facing with Gaza. Here's the Republicans on abortion. So they got to figure out a way to neutralize abortion as an issue in the presidential election. And the way Donald Trump decided to do that was by saying, it's up, thanks to me, and the evisceration of Roe v. Wade, which had enshrined abortion as a legitimate medical procedure that should be open to all women by virtue of a constitutional right. Thanks to me eviscerating that and getting rid of that, you're welcome, MAGA. It's now up to each state. So each state do what it wants. All right. He goes, and he figured that would absolve him. That would get him out of this predicament of us, whether he's for like a national law prohibiting abortion. Okay. So he's got, which would inflame one group and motivate his supporters. So what happens the day after he says that, the state of Arizona, the Supremes in their infinite wisdom in the state of Arizona rule that the law from 1864 abolishing abortion is now the law of the land. Now the Roe is gone. So there's no abortion in Arizona, a key swing state. So all of a sudden, Donald Trump, who says, oh, we're going to leave it up to the states as a solution, is dealing with, okay, this is what we're going to get. And he could lose Arizona as a result. And so he says, Pat, he goes, oh, well, we'll settle it. You know, yeah, they'll take care of it in Arizona. So the Democrats propose a bill that would bring back abortion rights, and the Republicans kill it. Why? Because the Republicans cannot support abortion right bills without losing their hardcore evangelical supporters. Donald Trump does not know what to do in this issue, Pat. You know, and I think his only way to avoid it is just to manipulate people on other things, like scare them about crime or, you know.
Or, good news, Ben, right. Governing bodies were the ones who made these laws. And I don't know if you read the paper, but Trump and his supporters hate government. Like I hate to, every time I come on, I talk about Chip Roy, but you know, I hate to be a fear monger like Pritzker about Bailey, who got really close to Bost. But Chip Roy is part of a caucus that got elected to Congress to destroy Congress. And I think where this is going, and I think that the Bible's all well and good. It's his favorite book. he owns many.
Yeah, he's selling them.
Many. He has many Bibles in his home. Favorite book. Have you ever heard the one where they ask him what his favorite verse is?
Yeah, it's, oh my God, yeah.
That is a classic.
All of them.
That is a classic.
You ever heard J.B. Foxx version? What's that?
I think they're good. I like Matthew. I like John. I like Luke. I like the Corinthians.
The Corinthians.
A letter to the Corinthians. Oh, God.
Remember Jamie Foxx's his spin on that? Where Trump's asked for his favorite rap artist. He goes, they're all good. Tupac.
But that's it. Like, I'm trying to, like, put this into words, but all this comes down to is he knows that people are going to vote in their best interest. And so I believe that Republicans are going to change their mind. If given the choice between Trump and God, Republicans are going to go with Trump because God can't cut their taxes.
So that's you think it won't matter? Ultimately, for many Republicans, but
they don't have to live there.
Yeah,
he'll figure. He's weaseled his way out of way worse binds than this, and I think he's going to make it Arizona's problem.
Then that will be his problem in Arizona, because I do not think ultimately that will succeed. I understand what you're saying, that if you're a quote unquote swing voter, which I'm not even sure exists anymore.
Me neither.
And you're right. I mean, just, you know, because someone sent me an article. Steve Kraft, who comes on the show and talks about Arizona politics. He sent me an article about inflation and how that could turn voters in Arizona against Biden. And I just thought to myself, you know, I just think most voters who use inflation as an excuse to vote for Trump are already going to vote for Trump.
Of course.
Yeah. And
another thing my grandmother used to say, when you're looking for an excuse, any excuse will do.
Whoa. That's I have heard that one before.
She's brilliant. She was brilliant.
Did not know that excuse. I mean, that line. That is a good line. All right. We will close with a couple things. Number one, it cannot be a Patrick Whelan show without his Nick Sposato imitation. So we've talked at great length about the city council debate over whether Alderman Byron Sisha Lopez should have been punished for speaking at a rally where a flag was burned. He did not burn the flag. By the way, the man who did burn the flag will be a guest on the show. I'm going to be recording a show interview with him. And Byron Sisha Lopez was a guest on the show, so you can hear all that stuff. And Dave Glowatz is preparing a city council show where we listen to some of the clips of our alder people and break them down and analyze them. So I'm really looking forward to that. Nick Sposato, man, he got up and gave a speech, your favorite alderman from the northwest side of the city. What's your thoughts about Nick Sposato's presentation at the great debate on flag burning?
Yeah, well, you know, oh man, where to begin? This equivocation, you know, I think we've talked about a lot of things. I could try to do a through thread of them. And it basically, in starting with the criticisms of the Johnson administration, most Republicans in Chicago, they want to complain about potholes. They want to complain about crime. They want to complain about homelessness. All these things are Democrats' fault because the Democrats are in charge. But Sposato's a Democrat, right? And every time they try to raise revenue or find money to pay to solve these issues that they have, the Republicans get their hackles up because they don't want to pay more in taxes. Taxation is theft. That is like the big thought on the right on certain social media platforms that will not be named on this broadcast. But I saw an interesting, this cognitive dissonance is just something I find interesting, Ben, because we've talked about Bost is, you know, fairly moderate, as in he doesn't shoot things in political ads. But in looking at this talking point and this general, you know, here in the blue bubble, the red people say, oh, they just want to raise our taxes. But they also want to complain about all these problems that need solving. Interesting article in the New York Times. I don't know if you saw, GOP voters favor taxes and spending. In seven swing states, 58% of Republicans support raising taxes on Americans making $400,000 or more.
Wow.
Seven swing states, 58% of Republicans, $400,000 or more. So I find that interesting when you think about the talking points on Bring Chicago Home, against Bring Chicago Home, things of that nature. And this idea that we have these problems that need solving, but we don't want to give them money to solve it. And so this cognitive dissonance is just often things that I see playing out in many different ways on the right. In unrelated news, Nick Sposato gave an interesting talk about Byron Sergio Lopez being present at a protest where an American flag was burned by a veteran who you'll have on the show. I am very much looking forward to that conversation, Benjamin.
Yes.
And here's a few great quotes. I'll just start listing these quotes from Nick, okay? And Ben, you know, you always have me on, and I appreciate that. You know, I know we don't see eye to eye on everything, but, you know, I like to think we're kind of buds now. So I want to thank you for having me on. Here's some things I said. I am the most right-leaning member of this council. Believe me, you all think it's Anthony, but believe me, it's me. Democrat Nick Sposato, lifelong Democrat Nick Sposato.
Yeah.
We, you know, it's a funny thing. Why is this? We were shouted down for exercising our First Amendment rights to do something about this, and people got thrown out of this meeting. So what he's saying is that, oh, yeah, we want to defend Byron's First Amendment rights and this veteran's First Amendment rights. So first of all, it was all mussed up, and I can't wait for GLOASS to cut this Gordian knot in half because it was just a mess of a meeting, yeah. And that is saying something. Because the rhetoric didn't make sick. Did he burn the flag? He didn't burn the flag, but he was there. Did he know it was there? He knew it was there, but that's okay. It's his right to do it. It's just all muddled up.
Yeah.
And it became about his association with that group that put that protest on, which I don't think we'll have time for, but is interesting. And so Nick brought up, there are people in this meeting who were yelling at Byron and saying that he shouldn't be able to do this, but they were kicked out of the meeting. Well, this is a government meeting. This is a council meeting. This isn't a street corner.
Yeah.
This isn't the local tavern. Like, you know, so that doesn't make sense, in my opinion. You know, on the day of the Columbus Day statue protest, you know, I got this DM, Mr. Mayor, and, you know, I'm going to try to clean it up for you. And he's reading this message that he got on Facebook or something where someone implied a death threat. And he starts with, Mr. Mayor, I'm going to try to clean it up, but I don't know. And immediately goes, hey, shithead. Like he says, I'm going to clean this up for you. And immediately says, shit. Really good stuff. What's his point? His point is that, well, Byron's allowed to burn a flag, but I got a death threat. So apples are oranges? I don't know. It just didn't make a lot of sense. Here's my favorite. Hopefully, you know, we can move. I feel like there's a few of them that hate me, don't dislike me, but hate me on this council, you know, but hopefully we can move forward like Carlos and me move forward. And I think we're kind of buddies now. Hopefully Byron and me can move forward and he doesn't hate me anymore. Maybe he doesn't hate me. We'll see. Okay. So let's break that down. There are people on this council who hate me. Carlos is one of them, but I think we're kind of buddies now.
Yeah.
Hopefully, Byron, we can move forward and he won't hate me. Maybe he doesn't hate me. We'll see. Great maneuver. Great maneuver. I really like it. It's all over the place. And then here's the coup de grace, Ben. I said, then I'll stop.
Yeah.
My black colleague taught me that there's a certain word, an N-word, that you can't use and stuff like that. So there are First Amendment rights, but, you know, there are some. Well, my black colleague taught me there's a certain word. How old was he when he arrived on council? Because the implication here is that before he arrived on council, he did not know that there was an N-word that you're not allowed to say. It was a barn burner of a meeting, man. Just top shelf Sposato material there.
Yeah. Now, we'll be talking, breaking down the council. And this like ties to the earlier topic I raised with the letter that Brandon Johnson received from some of the Jewish legislators. It is always challenging when the city council debates something that it's outside the immediate just parameters of zoning or housing. But it is always an adventure when the city council discusses anything, but particularly when it leaves the confines of just like basic bread and butter issues. And I welcome these discussions. I don't think they're a waste of time. I feel as though Nick Spassato's views, they're illustrative of the way a lot of Chicagoans view things. So he got elected. He continually gets elected. He's very popular in his ward for a lot of different reasons. So it's good that we hear it. I don't know what else to say, Pat. It's like if you think you live in your own little bubble, like your world is the bubble, go listen to a city council debate sometime and you go, oh, yeah, there are other people out there. Don't see the world the way I see it.
I just also love that the right constantly says Democrats run Chicago. They have a monopoly on the city council. And it's like, why don't you listen to a council meeting or two and tell me if Democrats run the table? Well, if that's the case, why are we fighting for votes?
Yeah.
The last part of what he talked about was about the DNC. And that's the association that Byron had with this group that does not want the DNC. And that's why he said he was the most right-leaning member of this council, because he said these people don't want the convention here. And I tell you, it means money in people's pockets. It means if you're looking out for the working man, you know it's good for the city to have that convention here. So I don't understand why. He's looking out for the working man, Ben. But in seven swing states, 58% of Republicans support raising taxes on Americans making $400,000 or more.
Wow.
So you tell me. I feel like we're in a three-party system and we just don't know it yet.
Wow, that is so deep, man. We'll close with that. That's because Bring Chicago Home just failed colossally, which would have raised a one-time tax on the sale of the most expensive property in the city and cut taxes on everything else, and it failed because two reasons. One, the left could not mobilize the support to pass it in an election where there was a very low turnout. And two, the right has so successfully gaslit the American public on government to the point where you can't even really talk about ways to raise money for government, even though we all know we need to do that. And yet, in the back of their minds, people know the right thing. It's very strange, very weird. I don't know what to say. I have no solutions. I am out of solutions, young man. But it'll give you something to think about as I go for a walk today and ponder the universe.
Commentary versus analysis, Ben.
Yes. Commentary versus analysis. I'm not sure what that means, but I'm going to go with that. All right, Patrick J., thank you very much. There is no J in his name, but I like to put it there anyway. Anything you want to promote before I let you go? You got any shows coming up?
Stay tuned. We'll be talking to Greg Pratt about his book in not too short an order before the end of the month. So stay tuned at Best Evening Ever, and I'm at the Pat Whalen on all your favorite social media platforms, except TikTok.
All right, very good. That's Patrick Whalen. I'm Ben Jarofsky. I also want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job. And I think Pat Whalen, Nick Spazzato, Anthony Napolitano, and Greg Pratt would agree. You do a great job. Producer Chris, give yourself a raise. Take it out of Betty Cash. Peace and love, everybody.
And don't forget, spend your weekend perusing ChicagoReader.com. You can get previous Ben Jarofsky shows, bonus interviews. You can sign up for that reader newsletter that comes directly to your email. It's real easy. It's real fun. You're going to enjoy it. And if you want to follow Ben on Instagram, it's at Benny J Show. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow The Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.